We paid less for our Craftmatic today than we did 20 years ago.
If you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and free information on today's Craftmatic adjustable beds. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Rated number one by consumers nationwide on ConsumerAffairs.com. Craftmatic beds come in all mattress types, including cool gel memory foam for up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand. Enjoy temporary relief of low back pain, poor circulation, nighttime heartburn, mild arthritis. You'll sleep better in a Craftmatic adjustable bed. So if you're still searching for the perfect solution to a good night's sleep, call now for prices and information. And then decide when you see how little they cost. Discover Craftmatic for less, up to 50% less than today's leading memory foam brand.
Call 1-800-316-5271. That's 1-800-316-5271. 1-800-316-5271. Call now.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. Turning in the serial killer known as the Unabomber. At the time, the longest-running FBI crime investigation and the ill health of the mental health system in America, the Unabomber's brother speaks out. And then we look at the FX TV miniseries, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. We'll talk to the person that actually saw O.J. Simpson on the night of the murders, driving frantically along the route away from Nicole's condo towards O.J.'s mansion. Evidence never entered into the actual trial. And then we'll speak with Nicole Brown's sister, Tanya Brown, all today on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. David Kaczynski is the brother of Ted Kaczynski, unfortunately better known as the Unabomber. David's the past executive director of a Tibetan Buddhist monastery. He's an anti-death penalty advocate. He speaks out publicly as well on mental illness and healing in the aftermath of tragic mass violence. His new book, Out Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family. Welcome, David. Honored to have you.
Oh, thanks, Jim, for having me on.
Good. As we start off, do a brief overview for those that might not remember or who are too young, of the Unabomber case, the dynamics of it, what happened, how many folks were killed, et cetera.
Yeah, beginning, I believe, in 1978, there were 16 bombs either sent through the mail or placed in public areas. The first bombs were fortunately not very well made. In the end, those 16 bombs, however, claimed three lives, injured a couple dozen people, a handful of those very seriously, and it was, as you said, the longest-running, most expensive criminal investigation in the history of the FBI.
And in fact, the Unabomber, which I did not know, stands for University and Airline Bomber.
Yes, the airline part people often forget, but some of the early bombs targeted airlines. There was one sent to an airline executive, and I guess most chilling of all, there had been a bomb placed on an airplane with an altimeter set to go off, and fortunately that one malfunctioned, or probably a couple of hundred people would have been killed.
Okay, it's been about 20 years since the capture and conviction, et cetera. What's driving you to write this now?
Well, I think a couple of things. On a personal level, our mother passed away in 2011. I retired from my job at New Yorkers Against the Death Penalty a few months after that. And I think for my stage in my life, I was spending more time maybe looking back, trying to process all that I'd been through. Also, seeing in the news how many other of these kind of lone wolf serial killers are out there, or mass shooters are out there. I've had contact with some of their families, and it's just devastating. Sometimes they call me just because they need someone to talk to who understands. What's interesting is there's a public perception, I think, that many, these people must come from highly dysfunctional families. Certainly in some cases, our case, the opposite is true.
Schizophrenia at the root of, I guess. Tell us just quickly what that is. And there had never been any prior sign of violence, though, right?
it was actually my wife Linda who, you know, heard about the manifesto, knew about my brother's anti-technology views. We had already gone to a psychiatrist seeing if we could try to get some help for Ted. You know, the word schizophrenia was something was, you know, we talked about. But Ted, to my knowledge, had never been violent. So when Linda suggested, hey, maybe he's the Unabomber, I thought, geez, somebody doesn't wake up in their 30s and just decide to start killing people. And as far as I could tell, that's what happened with Ted.
Well, your wife had this intuitive sense, I guess you call her sort of the real hero. What would even lead her to think about reading that manifesto and, I mean, out of the blue, linking it to your brother?
You know, that is a mystery to me still. I mean, I think it's remarkable. And as you say, she's a very intuitive person. I think, you know, thinking back, she was a fly on the wall of many, many family conversations. She had never met my brother, but she heard about him constantly as Mom and Dad and I talked about Ted, strategized how to help him, wondered what went wrong, of course, long before we knew he was violent. And I think maybe Linda had a little more objectivity if when she first suggested that Ted might be the Unabomber. I was honestly a bit in denial. I just didn't think it was possible.
You know, I read through some of the manifesto because I hadn't read it before, and it doesn't strike me as a document of insanity or total violence or anything, other than it looks kind of strange that a guy who's such a math genius was so anti-technology. But it doesn't read like it's a crazy, you know, person ranting against the world.
Yeah, you know, it's often been described as rambling, as disorganized, and actually I think the ideas expressed in the manifesto have merit. Ted was a mathematical genius. He had been a math professor at Berkeley. He had a very high IQ. I think what's clear to me is that he, you know, he could be rational within a certain area, but you look at his whole life, the whole picture, there's so many decisions that don't make sense. And in this case, he clearly got his personal issues, his personal mental health problems, his personal suffering projected onto the whole of society. At one point, he wrote in his manifesto that he was, in his diaries, that he was sending these bombs to take revenge against society, as if society was responsible for his personal suffering.
It's really an amazing circumstance you've ended up finding yourself in. Your mother particularly had told you never abandon your brother. We can talk about the baby story in a bit. But how did you figure out the line between your moral responsibility to protect society and your precepts that you were never to abandon your brother?
Yeah, you know, I love my brother, and I still love my brother, and at the same time, I just abhor, despise what he did in terms of hurting people, killing innocent people that he didn't know and had, you know, no real motivation to hurt. I guess, you know, if you look at the dilemma we faced, you know, on one hand, as it became clearer and clearer upon reading the manifesto that Ted could be the Unabomber, we realized, hey, we might wake up some morning and find out that another person had been killed. If Ted was responsible, that person would have died as a result of our inaction. You know, we'd have to go through the rest of our lives with the blood of some innocent person on our hands. Now, the other horn of this dilemma was the realization, hey, if Ted's done this, he'd be a prime candidate for the death penalty. What would it be like if my brother was executed? There was one thing that we could control if we couldn't control the outcome of a legal case, maybe we could influence it, but we could stop the immediate imminent violence if Ted was the Unabomber. You know, looking back, it's pretty clear. When my brother was arrested, there was another live bomb found under his bed, wrapped in a package, apparently ready to be mailed to someone. You know, if I had any doubts about what we were doing, they ended that day.
They went away then.
The lives were spared.
The how much do you think the family was in denial? In retrospect, did you feel that you folks should have made a more effort to force him to get help? Or, you know, he had this great career at a young age as a professor, and he was sort of allowed to abandon it and go out into the wilderness. Do you feel that you guys should have done more, or that, you know, it's his life after all?
Yeah, I would answer yes and no on that one. And let me go to the no first. You know, Ted was an adult, and actually, as his younger brother who really looked up to him, I was kind of cheering that decision. I thought, you know, how many people get to do what they want in life? Yeah. Instead of, you know, what other people expect them to do, and how many people have the courage to follow their principles and take a risk and quit their job. And, you know, I thought it was, you know, I looked up to my brother and I admired him. I know Mom at the time said, you know, Dave, I think this has more to do with his inability to relate to people than it does to technology. And she was worried. But again, Ted was, you know, he was, as far as we knew, minding his own business. It was really my wife, Linda, again, who, looking at reading some of Ted's hostile letters to his parents and eventually to me, said, you know, David, your brother's ill. And that kind of caught me up short. I remember first telling her, wait a second, he's got a genius IQ. He's always been different. This is the way he thinks. And then Linda pointed to a passage in a letter that was pretty bizarre, and she said, David, people who are healthy in their minds don't think this way. Now, we did actually approach a psychiatrist at that point. We brought some of Ted's letters. We had a long meeting with the psychiatrist. Of course, we weren't concerned that he was the Unabomber, but we were concerned that he needed help. And the psychiatrist basically explained the legal standard, which says that, you know, the only way you can force a person into treatment is if you could prove with legal evidence that they're in imminent danger to themselves or others.
And we'll be right back. More on the Unabomber. We'll finish up with David on that story. Stay with us.
Do you want to take the great shows of BizTalk Radio wherever you go? Well, now you can with the new BizTalk Radio app for iPhone and Android devices. Now all the great shows of BizTalk Radio are with you wherever you go, just an arm's reach away on your smartphone. Download today at the App Store or the Google Play Store and get the brand new BizTalk Radio app. It's biz for you wherever you go with the new BizTalk Radio app.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
Right now, Guitar Center is making it easier than ever for you to make music. For a limited time, save 15% on qualifying purchases or get 24 months promotional financing on purchases of $499 or more when you use your gear card. Save 15% on brand name gear from Fender, Gibson, Taylor, Martin, Pioneer, Yamaha, Casio, DW, Pearl, Zildjian, and more. Or get 24 months promotional financing now through Sunday with the Guitar Center gear card. There's never been a better time for you to make music. Promotional financing subject to credit approval. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or guitarcenter.com for details.
Today, more than ever, Americans need a means to protect their life savings. With a troubled economy and government spending out of control, they've been forced to promote loose money policies, which decreases the value of the dollar and promotes inflation. Birch Gold Group can help you protect your savings by rolling over all or a portion of your IRA or 401k into an IRA backed by physical gold. Take advantage of the best gold prices in years and enjoy the long-term hedge against inflation that gold provides by moving into a gold IRA from Birch Gold. Gold Group, the Precious Metal IRA Specialists. Call Birch Gold Group today for a free consultation on how a tax-free rollover to a gold IRA can offer stability, protection, and the peace of mind that your life savings, which you've worked so hard to build, is safe. Call 888-999-1351 and receive Birch Gold's free information kit, which offers the best-kept secrets for safeguarding your savings with gold. Call 888-999-1351. That's 888-999-1351.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back. We're talking with the brother of the Unabomber, David Kaczynski. The book, by the way, Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family. What does Every Last Tie mean?
It's actually taken from one of Ted's letters to his family in which he said that, you know, he was desperate to cut every last tie with his birth family. And that was incomprehensible to us at the time, but it was his cutting off was, I guess, my first indication that I just didn't understand where he was coming from.
The you know, you're the hero in this, and is talked about in the book and the doctorate, that you have this open heart, and your brother is completely closed off, almost sociopathically, sort of an evil and hero. But you don't really see it that black and white, right?
No, you know, I take, you know, I think there's a tendency, and an understandable tendency, when there's such, you know, horrific tragedy, to, you know, demonize the person that's responsible. And I'm not making any effort to excuse Ted, but I do try to humanize him. You know, he was not born some kind of evil seed. I point out that he was very kind to me as an older brother, that he had the capacity for empathy. And so I struggle with this question, how could this person I remember turn into a serial killer? And, you know, if people want to read the book to find the answer, I don't have the answer. But it's a question I struggle with in the book.
Now, he goes, your folks are a blue-collar family, and I don't think either of them have been to college, and he gets into Harvard at age 16. In retrospect, it didn't have the emotional maturity. Do you think it left a real scar?
I think it was a mistake our parents made to, you know, let him get out of the home so quickly. As you say, he was very advanced intellectually, but kind of developmentally not so advanced, somewhat withdrawn, very awkward. I think our parents thought, well, Harvard will have other smart people. He'll be able to relate to them because they're so smart. But, you know, I think they misjudged what Harvard was about. Harvard was, you know, upper-class school. Ted was not only younger than most of the students, but, you know, yeah, emotionally and culturally very, very estranged from his classmates.
Talk about the abandonment story when he was a little baby in the hospital, and where you feel the line is between a genetic predisposition to schizophrenia versus an emotional trauma that you can describe.
Well, first of all, let me, you know, just a disclaimer, I'm not a psychologist. You know, I have my own opinions. I've read a lot about it, schizophrenia, and I've talked to a lot of psychiatrists, got their points of view. I think we often look for that, you know, that sort of silver bullet explanation. You know, here's why Ted Kaczynski became the Unabomber. And I think it really is a whole set of circumstances, a perfect storm, if you will, of adverse circumstances that might have, you know, sent him off the rails. My mother felt very strongly, and I learned about this when I was 8 or 9 years old, and asked Mom, you know, like, why is Teddy so different? She said that he had been in the hospital for a couple of weeks when he was 9 months old, and she was always blamed the hospital because Mom and Dad were only allowed to visit their infant son during regular visiting hours, which was every other day. And Mom said that when Teddy came home from the hospital, he was, like, really different. Like, he was like a rag doll. He seemed to have lost his, you know, ability to interact with people. And that's when Mom said to me, David, never abandon your brother because that's what he fears the most. There's also mental illness in our family, actually, on both sides. I think one thing I talk about a little bit in the book, not a lot because I don't have firsthand experience, but Ted was in a psychological research project while a student at Harvard that was clearly unethical by standards and probably abusive. And then we see what happens with many people with mental illness is that they tend to isolate. They push away the people closest to them. They become paranoid. They think they can run away from, you know, the negative stimuli, but the problem isn't what's outside them. It's what's inside their own minds. And so I think those 20-plus years that Ted spent in his cabin essentially isolated had to have been very destructive for him as well.
The you know, in many ways, your parents, it's a very successful story coming over to the country and getting their son into Harvard. And then your mom deals with the fact that not only does her son have severe mental illness and becomes a serial killer, but her husband, your father, commits suicide out of the blue, probably linked to the fact that he was dying of cancer. But how did you and especially her manage to survive that?
Well, you know, I could say I was very fortunate to have two very strong, supportive, loving women in my life, my wife Linda and my mother Wanda. I think we really hung together very closely, the three of us, through the worst parts of this tragedy. You know, there was a time when Ted was first arrested and our house was surrounded by the media. You know, they wanted to get a look at the family that the Unabomber had come from and the brother who had turned him in, and it was just Linda, Mom, and I together, and somehow, you know, we hugged, we cried, and, you know, I think we hung in there for each other. I know Mom always wanted to support me, and I was just so afraid of how this all would affect her, so I was focused on supporting her, and Linda kind of was carrying us both emotionally. It was quite a time.
Talking about having stormed with the FBI, et cetera, around you, they had promised you no death penalty and they'd protect your identification, and they didn't either.
Well, I have to correct you on the death penalty piece.
Okay.
Actually, I'd contacted a lawyer before contacting the FBI, who proved tremendously helpful to us, but he basically did some research and found out there's no way to get a plea bargain in advance on behalf of someone else. So we really had to go ahead knowing that the death penalty was a possibility. It was a real shock, though. We had a promise in writing that our role as informants would be held strictly confidential. And so when it was out on the world news and the media was at our doorstep, it was kind of a shock. It was like not only did we have tremendous grief, but we didn't have, you know, space to kind of process it.
Your brother obviously found out that you were the one that turned him in. Any feedback from that, or?
What I understand is that he had asked an attorney, "How did they catch me?" And they said, "Well, didn't you know your brother turned you in?" And it was reported to me his first reaction was, "No, David loves me. He'd never do that." That was really painful to hear. In my heart, I know that turning in my brother was an act of love, not just for, you know, other people, but for Ted himself. I mean, what he was doing was spiritually, psychologically damaging to him. I hope, I believe we probably saved his life through all of this.
You're listening to Business Talk with Jim Campbell over the Business Talk Radio Network, 350 stations around the country, and coming to you from our flagship stations, WGCH, 1490 AM, Greenwich, Connecticut, and Yale Radio, WYBC. We'll take a look into the mental health crisis in America and more on the Unabomber as soon as we get back.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control of your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problem now by calling the experts at U.S. Tax Shield and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, so call now. 800-658-3876. That's 800-658-3876. U.S. Tax Shield. 800-658-3876.
If you're struggling to pay or haven't been making your student loan payments, listen carefully to this urgent alert. Have you been out of school for 10 or more years and you're still making your student loan payments? Are your student loans past due or even in default? Can't go back to school because of an old student loan problem? Fast Track Student Loans can get your student loans out of default, stop any wage garnishments, stop collection calls, and stop seizure of your tax refund. Give yourself a break. Stop the stress and get your student loan payments down to as little as $25 a month based on what you can afford to pay. One quick 10-minute call could help you solve your student loan problems. So call right now. Not available in all states. Payments may vary based on income.
800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. 800-685-0129. That's 800-685-0129.
What is term life insurance? It's basically a financial protection plan for your family if you pass away. It can be a hard purchase. Think about it. It's one of the few major purchases you can make that you will personally never use. But you've got to have it to protect your family. And you owe it to yourself to shop and compare to get the best possible rates. For term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, call the Term Lifeline today.
800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068. Remember, we specialize in term life insurance policies of $500,000 or more, and we have great rates for smokers too. So call today. 800-957-6068. 800-957-6068. That's 800-957-6068.
If you want to work until you keel over, have less of everything in retirement, or give back more of your hard-earned money to the stock market again, then just ignore me. But if you'd like to protect the money you save, receive a steady, predictable retirement income, and enjoy financial security for as long as you live, then listen to this. You can download a free report that reveals the wealth-building secrets Wall Street and the banks don't want you to know. You'll learn how you can get guaranteed growth, safety, and real prosperity without risking your money in the Wall Street casino, and how to get the money you need when you need it, simply by asking for it. This is the best way to have a 100% secure retirement and know your money will last as long as you do. To learn more about this method and to get your free report, go to 39security.com. That's the number 39security.com. 39security.com. Go to 39security.com.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak with a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-451-2976. That's 800-451-2976.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're talking with David Kaczynski. He's the author of Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family. He is Ted Kaczynski's brother. Before we look a little bit at the mental illness system and some of the work you've done against the death penalty as well, I was intrigued because I just interviewed recently Patty Davis, who was Ronald Reagan's daughter, that your brother had such a bleak perspective and you had such a positive one. And the Reagan brothers, who are from Illinois, by the way, the same thing. And that they had the father was a bad alcoholic. He was fired all the time. They moved all over the place. And Reagan told the story like it was Tom Sawyer, you know, in the Midwest. And the other brother had this horrible perspective on it, or more realistic, if you will. And you note in your book that one of the hollowed out books that your brother put a bomb on was called Ice Brothers. Are you struck by, you know, the fact that your outlooks were just so diametrically opposed? You call and you use the term disowned each other, right? Your character.
I guess disowned parts of each other.
Parts of each other, yeah.
You know, Ted kind of disowned my optimism and I disowned his pessimism, I guess is what it comes down to. And for me, it's about how you feel about people. I think, Ted's diagnosis is paranoid schizophrenia, so he had a very, very negative, even a fearful view of other people. Some of that might have derived from some experiences in his life, like the study at Harvard, but, interestingly enough, through this whole turmoil, and, you know, even the betrayal of the government with their spilling our secret to the world, my overall feeling coming out of this is to have a little bit more trust and a little bit more admiration for the human heart. As I mentioned in the book, my mother and I had a meeting with a victim's family. One of the people almost killed by one of my brother's bombs, Gary Wright, has become a real good friend of mine. And, I think human beings have a capacity to transcend tragedies like this. We do our best. It's not like you get over them, but maybe you become a little wiser, a little more compassionate as a result. At least that's the aspiration.
What do you? What's your perspective now on the state of the mental health system in America? And I know Dr. Noel in the afterward talks about basically since it was deinstitutionalized, folks were taken out of them. It's really criminalized mental institute, and we don't really have a functional system. What's your approach, having suffered, watching your brother as a victim and others, obviously, as a result of his behavior?
Right, yeah. And I asked Dr. Noel to write the afterword, and it's a beautifully written piece. And
it is, yeah.
We see kind of eye to eye about some of the problems with the mental health system. There was deinstitutionalization. The state-run mental institutions were not great places, and there were abuses. But the solution should not have been to move mentally ill people into our prisons. And I think there's a recent study that said about 20% of state prison inmates across the country have serious diagnoses like schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. I think many of these folks could be helped and rehabilitated. The one thing that's really changed in the last 25 years is the efficacy of treatment. I mean, it used to be they would try shock treatments or even cut out pieces of people's brains, and it was basically hopeless to be diagnosed with, say, schizophrenia. And today we have medications, we have approaches, Family Support, NAMI, National Alliance on Mental Illness, is a great organization that provides support, guidance, education for families. There's a lot we could do. The resources aren't there. And I also think the creativity isn't there. I think we need to work harder at reducing the barriers, engaging people. I'll give you an example. At one point, my brother had actually written from his little cabin in Montana. He'd written a letter to the mental health service in the county where he lived, 60 miles away, and asked if he could do therapy through the mail. And they said no. They wrote back and said no. You have to pay. Maybe we could help you sign up for welfare or something. But for Ted, paranoid guy who had a difficulty even talking to a person face to face, this was an insurmountable barrier. I think we need to do more with taking away the stigma on mental illness, understanding that these are our brothers, they're sisters, they're people who can genuinely be helped. And making treatments more available, more affordable, less humiliating.
Do you think the treatments in prison are getting any better? I don't know what kind of treatment he's receiving. And I think specifically of John Hinckley, who tried to assassinate President Reagan, right? Apparently he's improved enough that he's allowed to go for weekend leaves without any security or anything.
Right, and I believe he was found not guilty and sent to a secure mental health facility, not a penal institution per se.
So there are mental health prisons, if you will?
Well, there's secure facilities where people can be remanded by a court for a period of time until they're deemed to no longer be dangerous. Of course, when people have done things like trying to assassinate the president or, what my brother did, it's a pill for people to swallow, even the idea that they could ever be out walking the streets again.
It is.
And I appreciate that. I think that's a serious and significant concern. On the other hand, I do think prison isn't the best place to deal with people whose violence or whose antisocial behavior came from a mental illness.
Do you know how...
I want to say one more thing about this, Jim, and that...
Go ahead.
There's a tendency, and Dr. Knoll talks about this in the afterword, to equate violence with mental illness.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that.
Part of the stigma, and there's maybe a slight elevation with paranoid schizophrenia of antisocial behavior, but in general, people with mental illness are more likely to be victims of crime than perpetrators of crime, no more violent than the general population. On the other hand, I'm totally convinced that if my brother had not gotten sick, he would not have done the things he did.
Now, you've made it your mission both to work against the death penalty and also to help heal from mass traumas, and even in this state you were involved in Sandy Hook. Maybe talk a little bit about that.
Yes, by that point I was working at a Buddhist monastery in Woodstock, New York, and a friend of mine who had booked me into speaking at some colleges gave me a call because his best friend had lost a child there in that horrific shooting. And, he said, well, Dave, we've had Jewish people come and Christian people come to talk about healing from trauma, spiritual path toward healing. What about, would you bring a Buddhist perspective? So Dr. Knoll and I and two Buddhist teachers went to a synagogue in Sandy Hook a few months after after that shooting, and it was very, very powerful, very emotional for us, and I hope helpful for the community.
As we get down to the end here now, obviously I don't believe you've seen your brother since he's been in prison. Do you have any sense of, are they treating him? Is he in any better mental state, or do you know anything about his condition?
What I learned, ironically, comes primarily from the media, since Ted doesn't respond to my letters and doesn't allow me to visit. Mom used to call the prison when she was alive and every now and then, and was always told that, inmates have a right to privacy, and they really couldn't tell her anything. And it was difficult for her to deal with. From what I've learned from the media, ironically, Ted seems to have quite a correspondence. There are people who are are interested in his ideas. Apparently, he's never expressed remorse for what he's done, but he's publicly renounced violence in these letters that he writes. And, you know, the irony is here he is in solitary confinement with probably more social interaction than he had for many years before that.
And the interesting thing to me is I guess he has these ongoing communications, which I didn't know, but not with you. How's your head at now as we finish off? Obviously, you still love your brother, but it must hurt that you've no contact for over 20 years, right?
Yeah, it hurts. It's like a shadow. Sometimes I think, okay, if I write this book, it'll kind of maybe put it in my own words, and then I can let it go, let the book speak for me. So that's part of the motivation. Again, I'm just very fortunate to be, you know, happily married, to be healthy, to have lots of good friends, and to have looked back at, you know, that tragedy without any real personal regrets. I'm just so thankful that Linda, you know, had the courage to confront me, and that we were, as a couple, we were able to confront this situation and do what had to be done.
Well, obviously, it was a very tough and moral act, and obviously to be commended for the work you're doing in helping heal from these mass tragedies. Having to go back and put yourself in that environment and to work against the death penalty as well. I want to thank David Kaczynski for joining us. His book, again, is Every Last Tie, The Story of the Unabomber and His Family. It's published by Duke University Press. Thank you very much, David.
Thanks, Jim. It was a pleasure.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. 800-430-7570. That's 800-430-7570.
This is a national health care alert from the Health Hotline. If you, a family member, or a loved one suffers from knee pain and have Medicare as your primary insurance, we've got great news. You could qualify for a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost to you. Get free delivery, and all the paperwork is handled by our accredited suppliers at no charge to you. So if you're on Medicare and have knee pain, don't wait. You may qualify to immediately receive a pain-relieving knee brace at little or no cost. Friendly agents are standing by 24/7 to help you. We also have other pain-relieving braces, too, for your shoulder, ankle, or back. You may be eligible to get these items and more at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Our friendly representatives are standing by now to help you, so please call now.
Call 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301. Again, 855-227-0301. That's 855-227-0301.
I've owned my company for 14 years now, and I can tell you that payroll is a four-letter word. I hate doing it. It eats up hours I don't have, and it costs me money I could be saving, but my accountant's too expensive. And I'm not sure who to call, but I know I need help.
We're Paychex, and we take all the hassles out of small business payroll. We save you time and money. It's easy. Call, fax, or give us your payroll information securely online, and we take care of the rest. We calculate the correct taxes, manage payments and direct deposits. We even send out your checks. Payroll doesn't need to be a four-letter word anymore. We're so sure that we can save you time and money that we'll give you a month's payroll free. Just for calling 877-726-3369. Get 1 month's payroll for free. Call Paychex right now. 877-726-3369. That's 877-726-3369.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370, 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Don't complain about your cable bill going up and up and up. Do something about it. Grab a pencil and jot down this special number.
Call 877-439-MYTV.
The more cable TV rates go up, the better digital satellite TV looks. So cancel the cable and get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money.
Call 877-439-MYTV.
Right now, to sign up for packages starting as low as $24.99, and there's no equipment to buy. You get free HD TV upgrade, a free DVR upgrade, and free professional installation. You control what you watch, when you watch it. Record your favorite shows, pause and rewind live TV, even skip the commercials. Watch local channels too. At just $24.99, what are you waiting for? Pull out your major credit or debit card.
Call 877-439-MYTV. That's 1-877-439-MYTV.
Cancel the cable, cut costs, and get more.
Call 877-439-MYTV. That's 1-877-439-MYTV.
Biz Talk Radio.
Jill Shively works for New York Life doing financial planning and life insurance. She also has a nonprofit film production company, and I want to welcome her back. We're honored to have her. I had her last time we talked about this. She's very down to earth. I found very credible, and she'd been vilified a lot in the trial and has hung in there very well. So tell me, what are your thoughts on watching the OJ series, watching yourself? Who's playing you? How accurate is everything?
My own person that's playing me, Romy Rosemont, and she's playing me. I've gotten a lot of feedback, and even on myself, she's not playing me accurately. I was not that animated, and there's a lot of things I felt important to what they were doing. They have the timeline to show me almost running into OJ, and what was important to me was his headlights were off in the Bronco, and they have him as being on, and that was why I didn't see him. That was the whole reason, is because he was speeding at night, and they had his lights off. And I wasn't going to Soup Plantation. It did not exist at the time. And he wasn't yelling at me. He was yelling at the other driver of the Nissan that was there.
It's interesting. I've seen that, and I saw the same thing. Yeah, that you could see very brightly. What did you describe the story as you know it, and what did you see of him?
I was driving to a store. I had the green light. I was heading through an intersection at San Vicente and Bundy, and he was heading north on Bundy, speeding, and his lights were off. The only time I saw him when he was practically directly in front of me, and I saw the shiny rims of his car, but I barely missed him because his lights were off.
So it obviously seemed strange that his lights were off. It was a white Bronco, right?
Right, right.
Did you get a look at him though, such that once you were you knew it was OJ? I know you told me once you thought it was Marcus Allen at first.
Right, and then he spoke, and I recognized his voice from the Naked Gun 33 1/4 or third. It just came out, and we had just seen it, but and I recognized him after he spoke because he had given me a look after he yelled at the guy to move on, and then he sped off.
How close were you to him?
I would say 20 feet, something like that, if I remember correctly.
Close,
because I almost hit his car.
Could you get a sense of, did his expression when you saw it, did it look like a guy that was sort of temporarily insane, nuts, or a guy escaping, or did he look crazed, or what did you get anything?
He looked nuts. He looked crazy. He looked like he was in a hurry, and at the time I thought he was, like, drunk, or I had no idea, but he was in a hurry, and he was wanting, he was crazed. He was yelling and at the other guy. He was trying to get out of the intersection, and then finally he did get out of the intersection.
So he's yelling and crazed, which
right.
he didn't get a sense that this is a guy running from a double murder, that he might feel bad about it or anything? Or
Well, at the time I didn't even know there was a double murder, well, but in hindsight, yeah. No, he just was in a, he was crazy and he was in a hurry, and it was looked like he was not of the right, he was not of his right mind. I mean, he almost hit two people.
Are you going to watch the entire series overall? Does it ring true in total, in totality?
A lot of things were just embellished to make it more dramatic, I guess. But I don't think it's factual or accurate. Jeff Toobin's book was a good book, but I don't think that this is an accurate series.
Good point. I thought his book was very good too.
Yeah.
That's Jill Shively. She actually ran into history, literally, that mm-hmm. night, almost running into O.J. Simpson, told the truth and got beat up for it pretty bad. She's going to stay with us to go into overtime. More on OT. We'll have more O.J. Coming up next will be Nicole Brown Simpson's sister. That's her youngest sister, Tanya Brown, who's been on the show before. She's a certified life coach with a master's degree in psychology, a public speaker on mental health and domestic violence issues. Her book is Finding Peace Amid Chaos, My Escape from Depression and Suicide. And we're greatly honored to have you back again. And I know, Tanya, that you're not necessarily overwhelmed with the FX series of People versus O.J. Tell us your thoughts and your family's thoughts.
You know, it's funny, Jim, because I forget that it's actually on. It really shows you how much I live in the past. What I am hearing, and it's quite comical, is how fabricated some of these scenes are. And, you know, if they're fabricating just a minute scale of the show, what else should we expect? You know, if you're going to share a real life docudrama, you've got to really be, you know, concise and know your facts. And I think the thing that's really upsetting me about this whole deal is that nobody, not one person from the show, Jeffrey Toobin, the actors, the producers, not one person contacted my family. And so here I am, I'm sitting in a speaker's boot camp, and somebody comes up to me and says, "Oh, Tanya, I know who's playing you in the miniseries." And I'm like, "What miniseries?" We have no idea. And, but even, you know, after when, you know, what week are we in? Three or four? And I really got to thinking about it. I said, now, regardless of public opinion about OJ killing my sister, you know, he's still the dad to two kids. And no matter what, children love their dad. And for them not even to consider Sydney and Justin breaks my heart. And I'm just really tired of disrespect in our society, and that's really why I've spoken up in the past. It's not so much like I'm trying to stop the show or the movie. It's not about that, because they're going to do it anyway. It's more like show some common courtesy to the family, to my mom, to the children, so there's no surprises.
And I have to say, it does seem deeply insulting that they wouldn't even have consulted with your folks. I guess to finish up, tell us how you and your family members are doing now today after all these years, and what you're doing in the memory of Nicole. I know you and Denise are definitely doing a lot of stuff in her memory.
A lot of good things. It brought domestic violence to the forefront. Laws were changed with regards to reporting domestic violence. When I look at when numbers increase in battered women's shelters, that's a good day, because that means more women and children and even men are reaching out and getting the help that they believe they need.
I have to
we've got good stuff happening in our tight, small little circle. It's good stuff.
I always love having you on, because you really are inspirational, and you guys do so much in Nicole's honor. You do so much for domestic violence and telling your own story so honestly. This has been Business Talk with Jim Campbell. Next show, former Democratic pollster to President Bill Clinton, Doug Schoen, a surprising revisionist look at President Richard Nixon, calling the former Republican president the most consequential president since FDR. That'll be an interesting show. Now, thanks to David Kaczynski, Jill Shively, Tanya Brown, and thanks to our national audience for listening. We'll see you next Sunday, as always, on Business Talk with Jim Campbell.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com. Biz Talk Radio.